This is The Topic is Trek, episode 35, for Friday, December 28th, 2018. Happy New Year! Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! And if you're checking your calendar and say, wait a minute, it's not New Year yet. It's a couple of days till New Year. Well, that is true, but I couldn't resist.
I think you just made a new holiday, New Year.
I did.
Happy New Tasha Yar.
Yeah.
December 28th will forever shall be known as New Year.
Like New Coke, only different.
Not to be confused with the Pirate's Day. Talk like a pirate.
Or
day.
Life Day.
No, let's not confuse Life Day with anything. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allboard, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And as you can tell, beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello.
And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I got nothing here. No. Still no listeners. No listeners.
All right. Well, sooner or later, it's bound to happen, I'm sure. Well, as we speak, and as we release this episode, there are 6 days until the release of the next Short Trek and only 20 short days until the release of season 2 of Star Trek Discovery.
Woo-hoo! And dare I say 2 more days till the Orville?
You dare.
Wait for it. Your story is later.
Yes.
In fact, I think we made that story last on purpose.
Just for you.
Okay. Come on.
All right, but we do have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about news. We're going to get into a main topic where we talk about characters on Star Trek with a particular color shirt. And then in our Warp Speed Roundtable, we're going to peer into the future. Ooh. So let's get started with some subspace chatter.
Hey, by the way, the Supreme Court said that color shouldn't matter, but just saying.
All right. Well, fair enough. And I forgot to ask what Charlie thought about the subspace chatter. Do we have?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
I keep saying we do. I don't understand why he keeps doing that. Right. All right,
Craig. You remember when we did some Star Trek cosplay a few years ago, and I said red shirt lives matter.
Yeah.
It all comes full circle, doesn't it?
That's right.
And speaking about full circle, around the world is where you'll find oceans. Wow, I'm rusty here after 2 weeks already. But we have some news. As you may know, Chuck, Craig, and I are going on the Star Trek cruise coming up in January. Boy, I hope that was a boat whistle. I'm just...
Hey, I hope we're not late.
Really, really hoping. But we have news about the next Star Trek cruise.
We haven't even gotten on board yet, and they're announcing the next one for 2020. This is from Trek Today. The fourth Star Trek The Cruise event has been announced by Entertainment Cruise Productions for 2020, and Star Trek Voyager fans will be interested in this event. Star Trek The Cruise 4, the most extraordinary Star Trek adventure in the universe, is excited to announce its 2020 mission plan. With Kate Mulgrew at the helm, Star Trek The Cruise 4 will set sail in 2020 for an extended voyage on a new ship with new adventures in celebration of the 25th anniversary of Star Trek Voyager. The fourth cruise, this is a quote, the fourth annual cruise will set sail from March 1st through 8th, 2020, from Miami to Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, San Juan in Puerto Rico, St. Thomas and Grand Bahama Island aboard Royal Caribbean's Explorer of the Seas. Mulgrew will be joined by the star-studded crew, including a host of Voyager classmates. Star Trek Cruise 4 will set sail on the beautiful Explorer of the Seas, a Voyager-class ship.
I see what they did there.
Perfectly suited to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Star Trek Voyager. The fully chartered ship will be transformed into the ultimate Star Trek amusement park at sea, with one-of-a-kind nightly shows with the main theater, parties and panels in more intimate venues and pub crawls, parades, and costume parties on the promenade. Well, if it's a promenade, then it should be Deep Space Nine, right?
I think you're right.
With more than a dozen bars, restaurants, clubs, lounges, and dazzling casino, tranquil spa, and expensive pool deck, this ship is a destination of its own. The full lineup of Trek stars will be announced January 5th, 2019. Trek Today will update readers when the full guest list is announced. Booking begins January 14th.
So that means that the day after we set sail, they're going to come up to all of us and go, hey, you know, if you come back next year, you get all these people.
And sign up begins. It's like Dragon Con. Sign up begins the day after you get off the ship.
My.
As you exit through the gift shop, please pick up your passes for the next voyage.
So we don't know what adventure awaits us in January on the cruise. It'll be the first time on a Star Trek cruise for the three of us. It's interesting that we're already looking forward to another year. And I think they've also changed the time of year because I think they've all been in January and this one's going to be in March.
It may have something to do with the launching of that vessel. If it's a new ship, it's probably got a service date that they're targeting.
Well, I think they mean new ship in that they've always been on the ship we're going on. That ship is already in service.
It's already sailed.
That ship has already sailed,
my friend.
We're going on the Norwegian Jade. This is going on a Royal Caribbean ship, and it's a new ship. Mm. So it's got to be...
It's a new ship for the Trek cruise, but it's an existing... Warning in these things is kind of a little suspicious there.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
You know what's funny is I see they said the stars will be announced January 5th, 2019. I'm thinking, wow, that's a long ways away. Well, that's only...
No.
Yeah. No, it's no. not. It's really not.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2018 is in the bag, Craig.
I know. I'm sitting here thinking, I was just thinking, wow, they told us a lot of people most of who was coming ahead of time. And I just, yeah, never mind.
Craig,
but you know what gets a jump on?
If this was football, we'd be in the red zone. This is about when we would find out we have a show on Dragon Con. Okay. That's how close we are. Now you get, this is reality time.
Now it's panic time.
Yeah, a little inside baseball for everybody there.
Now, before any of that happens, we have another Star Trek short trek coming up, The Escape Artist.
I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, CBS All Access just released the first trailer for the upcoming episode of Star Trek Short Treks, which will focus on Harry Mudd as played by Rainn Wilson. Titled The Escape Artist, the episode will focus on the galactic criminal and con man Harry Mudd, or Harcourt Fenton Mudd, as we all know, brought to life in Star Trek Discovery by Wilson, who also directed this episode. The script for The Escape Artist is by Rick and Morty head writer Michael McMahon, who will also be showrunning the upcoming animated Trek series, Star Trek Below Decks. So we get a little bit of everything going on here.
Yeah.
The released synopsis of the episode reads, Harry Mudd, Rainn Wilson, back to his old tricks of stealing and double dealing, finds himself in a precarious position aboard a hostile ship, just in time to try out his latest con.
Now, the hostile ship, apparently, according to the trailer, this looks like he's aboard a Tellarite ship. And I got to tell you, they did a wonderful job with the Tellarite makeup.
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything going on in that episode. You feel like he's in one place and he's another place. And and we know these things are short. So this thing is definitely looks like it's going to be very fast paced.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a little concerned for us because I'm trying to figure out when we're going to be able to see it.
I'll be watching it in the hotel room probably the night before the cruise.
We'll all gather around.
Our phone.
That's right.
Who's got the best data deal here? I'll
bring my MiFi from work. They can pay for it.
You can eat dinner and then watch it. Yeah.
Of course, there are probably 150 people in the different hotel rooms and the hotels we're staying at doing the same thing. Why don't we just pool our resources and say, hey, let's go to the bar and throw it up on the big screen.
Get a projector. Yeah, I'll pack mine.
Yeah, move that football game. Let's put it on Star Trek.
That's right. That will go over well.
We don't need
a playoff. Yeah, if it's Miami playing, that'll go over well.
They'll be playing next week. Come on.
So that's our news on the short track, but we also have some news that I kind of looked at with a dubious eye, but I figured I'd throw the story in. It has to do with our upcoming season 2 of Star Trek Discovery.
I don't think it's a dubious eye. You just got, it's a little, you know, flaky on the right.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I'll take care of that.
All right.
Well, I'll take care of that. You read the story.
Yeah. All right. So Star Trek Discovery season 2 photo teases a possible Pike romance. I kind of saw the same thing too. When I saw this picture, Trek Discovery, look at it.
Well, read on, McDuff.
There's a hand extended there. Anyway, so Star Trek Discovery will be bringing back a few familiar characters and faces in the upcoming sophomore run, as well as Ethan Peck joining the cast as a younger version of Spock. Sorry to say Star Trek. I don't know why I was going to read Spock as Star Trek. But that we see before. Anson Mount.
He's not the youngest Spock we've seen before. What about younger version? Like 3 with the little boy?
Wait, I read it wrong. As Ethan Peck joining a cast as a younger version of Spock than we've seen before. Wait, yeah, that's right. He is not.
Yeah. No,
we've seen two versions.
You did read it wrong. But
we've seen two younger ones.
I think we covered this last time with all the different iterations of Spock. He's right. Not the youngest.
80 people have played Spock.
Yeah. He's one of the many. We'll just say it's one of the many people who's played Spock.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Anson Mount's taking over the reins of the USS Discovery as its new captain, Christopher Pike, and hopping aboard alongside will be number one, as played by Rebecca Romijn.
Mm-hmm.
Longtime Trekkies will know that both Pike and number one hail from the pilot, the original series, The Cage.
Right.
Both characters are written out of the main cast the rest of the show, but Pike has shown up throughout the franchise since. Number one, however, hasn't, even though she was played by Majel Barrett, a real-life wife of Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, and she did have a large, long career in Star Trek besides
not
being one of the same character. Discovery has a lot of freedom to flesh out the pair's relationship then, and it seems that season 2 just might introduce a romance between the duo. TV Line debuted a promo image of the new run, which sees Pike and Number One dining together in a mess hall, and there seems to be a lingering look going on between them. It's because it's not a video, it's a picture.
Right. You can infer a lot of stuff. It will linger
forever at that.
Hey, hence the term, hence the cliche, hey, take a picture, it'll last longer. So anyway, I thought there is kind of a look there, and Number One has her hand out, like.
All right, well, let me describe.
She's pushing the tablet away, though. Just, I mean, it could be anything. Like, here's the duty roster, and she says, "Get this away from me."
Sign this.
Let me try to describe the image as best I can. I'm assuming this is taking place in the mess. Well, I don't know. It could be the mess hall of the Enterprise. Could be the mess hall of Discovery, because Pike is dressed in a Discovery uniform, whereas Number One is dressed in an Enterprise uniform. Number One has an entire tray with a sports drink of some kind and a giant sandwich.
I thought it was and a ketchup and a hamburger.
Okay. Could be. And Pike just has a glass of some beverage, adult or otherwise, we don't know. Now, on the table between the two of them, there is what appears to me, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears to be kind of an upgrade of the old pad from the original series.
Mm-hmm.
And she appears to be pushing it towards Pike, and Pike has his hand on it. And they're looking at each other because they're in conversation. Now, I don't know if I necessarily read romance into that situation, but I could be wrong. I'll admit I could be wrong about that. And it sounds like Craig was seeing that at first glance.
Well, yeah. And when I first saw the picture, I kind of got that feeling, kind of the way they're looking at each other, and she has her arm extended out. But then I realized that there's a tablet between them, and not, she wasn't like touching his hand or something.
Captain, there's a tablet between us. I just can't possibly.
Something's coming between us. Yeah. It's called the duty roster. Get duty working roster. On it.
Sign I don't this think with the so. Stylus.
Yeah. Finney's up. Finney's up again. Okay.
They've been upgraded to Apple iPads with 2 Ds.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts. That hurts.
Oh, you know, we have a sound effect for that.
Now.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, my. Now, if you want to take a look at the picture and make your own decision on what you think is going on here, just go over to the show notes for episode 35 over at thetopicistrek.com, and you can decide for yourself because we have links to all the stories we're talking about in the show notes. And let's move on to the next story, and it has to do with a resolution or high definition of something or other.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you.
This is in regards to the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind. So What We Left Behind, the crowdfunded Deep Space Nine documentary, is nearly done. In fact, the actual interviews, editing, sound mix, and most of the other elements have been completed. What's left now is to upgrade clips from the show to high def. Thanks to an outpouring of support from fans, the documentary team can now upgrade all clips from the show. So while the documentary had its official premiere in parties in Los Angeles, New York, and the Destination Star Trek in UK earlier in the fall, many of the clips from the TV show were still in standard def. That means backers won't get their copies just yet. The process of remastering even the limited clips used in the documentary is time-consuming and expensive. Remember, despite the inclusion of DS9 showrunner Ira Stephen Bear, this is an independent documentary, so CBS is charging the team to have the 35mm film unarchived, cataloged, scanned, and cleaned up. In the video below, well, if you go to the show notes, like we said before, you can see some of the clips. Now, obviously, Ira, there's a clip of him telling the fans, sorry, I know this stinks, we're going to have to wait, but you'll be happy with the result. He does have a little fun with the clip. He goes, now yes, look at the yes. old standard def, and it's just like this Charlie Chaplin black and white scratched up thing on purpose.
Yeah. Like, this is the original.
Didn't
that
look terrible?
Now, that looks awful. Yeah.
Look at it in high def, and they're walking slow like it's an action movie. it's really funny. So I am looking forward to this. In their backer update sent out today, the team explained the reasoning for holding off on rushing out copies for early backers. Well, we could have just released the version of the film that was previewed to the backers in Los Angeles, New York, and the UK this October, we didn't think it would be fair to you to release a separate, better version, all HD, just a few months later. That seems like a very George Lucas thing to do.
Although it sucks, I think it's the right decision, though. I think it's the right decision.
Oh, I do, too. And I think the fans will understand that they have to wait for quality. And he said, this is a very rare opportunity. We didn't think we'd ever get this chance again, so we're going to jump all over this thing. So when we started this campaign, we had no idea we'd be given this opportunity to actually see DS9 in HD for the first time in our documentary. And that's all thanks to you and your support. Talking to the supporters, of course. Those who participated in the latest hashtag HiDefHero campaign should be receiving their challenge coins shortly and have already seen them in their mailboxes, along with a special note from Ira. Rest assured, we're in the midst of HD remasters, which is our final big step to completion. We want to see this film released just as much as you do. But in the end, we trust the opportunity to remaster as much DS9 as possible is well worth a couple of months of additional wait. We believe when you see the finished product, you'll agree.
So the thing that struck me, though, in the clip that they showed that was upgraded, it really didn't look all that good to me. I mean, we have two stills from it actually in the article, and the article is from Trek Movie. There doesn't seem to be a lot of definition in this high definition.
I noticed the same thing. I was watching a full screen on my laptop, which is higher than high def, going, ooh, you know, maybe we're just not seeing the right thing here.
And that may be true, because I would compare it to, the upgrades they did for TNG. And some places it was okay, and the other places it was like, whoa, you know, it kind of blew me away a little bit.
Yeah. But. Right. So this may have been one of the first clips that they did. I don't know. I'm looking at the image of Quark and Morn is in the background, but it seems as blurry as I remember being on television. So
I. But it's 16 by 9. It's not 4 by 3. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where to go with that.
Well, I tell you, there was, you know, that switchover period from VHS to DVDs, and there was some movies I'd only watched on DVD, and then you see it on television or on a DVD, and it's like, whoa, it blew me away by the quality was so different, because I was so used to the VHS quality, and then it steps up to like a remastered version on the DVD, like Dumb and Dumber. I watched that a million times on my VHS.
Why am I not surprised?
I'm not quite sure the bar is in the right place here with this discussion.
But what I'm saying, well, it's not like they went through a huge, hey, let's spend some money and reimage this.
Every hair on the dog fur on that van, you can just.
You know what
reel
I'm saying?
Reel it in, boys. Reel it in. What's the topic again?
Oh, the topic is track. That's right. But
yeah, I'm just saying that the quality was such a big whoa moment, especially even TNG. I ordered that DVD or the Blu-ray.
When they had the first three episodes?
Yeah, it's got like three episodes on it. And yeah, it was like watching it for the first time again.
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be an upgrade in quality from anything we watched on television, because there's all sorts of compression that go on. And so it's certainly going to be better than that at the very least.
Are they planning a Blu-ray or digital release? What was the medium they're distributing this with?
I'm not sure if they specified how it was going to be released. I'm hoping it's something you can purchase as a physical media, because otherwise you're going to run into the same sort of problems all over again. There'll be compression online.
Yeah. I missed the whole thing. Somehow it danced around me. I didn't realize it was going on. Otherwise I would have probably jumped in on it.
You should have paid attention when we were discussing it on the topic as Trek.
No. I mean,
he was watching Dumb and Dumber.
When the campaign was going on for the
You should have been paying attention when we were talking.
Was it still going on? I thought it'd been like a couple years.
They had an additional funding that went on.
Oh.
Probably to get their HD scanning money.
I'm still waiting on my Frank Zappa documentary.
Oh, okay. All right. So we'll, Frank is working. No, he's not working on that. All right. Let's move on to our next story. This comes to us from Media Play News, a source we don't normally cover here on the topic as Trek. Driven by double-digit gains in demand, three digital originals returned to the top 10 this week that ended December 15th, according to Parrot Analytics data. Three titles are The Ranch, which is something on Netflix, Voltron, Legendary Defender, also from Netflix, and the third one was Star Trek Discovery from CBS All Access. Woo-hoo. Came in at number 8 with just over 20 million average daily demand expressions, an 18.6% gain from the prior week, when the science fiction series was ranked at number 13. Now you're wondering, well, how do they pull these numbers together? Very interesting. It says that, let's see. Demand expressions is a proprietary metric used by Parrot Analytics to measure global demand for TV content. The metric draws from a wide variety of data sources, including video streaming, social media activity, photo sharing, blogging, commenting on fan and critic rating platforms, and downloading and streaming via peer-to-peer protocols and file-sharing sites.
It said nothing about the topic as Trek in there. I'm disappointed.
No, I think that was implied with, like, you know, we're in that mix of clearly the top of the social media chain and the blogging chain.
Commenting on fan and critic rating platforms. We're in there somewhere.
We are. But with the comments that they make about us, we don't want to talk about those.
I think they refer to us as bottom feeders.
That's another story altogether. I'm trying to think now, this, since it was the week ending December 15th, that would fall in reigns to be when The Brightest Star was released, I think. So that's probably why it bounced up from from 13 to number 8. But it's interesting to know. I mean, with that type, so they're talking global when they're talking about the metrics used for this. So that's pretty impressive to be at number 8, not even when the main season is on, when you just have, you know, a short episode coming out.
No, that's true.
All right. So I thought that was an interesting way to keep track of what's been going on with Discovery while it hasn't been around. But there's a more bizarre thing going on with the Enterprise, and I just don't even understand it. Can you explain this to me?
The poor people that are on the Enterprise. We're not. So Star Trek's Enterprise just became a Transformer, of course.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy talk. As if the Star Trek Enterprise wasn't already awesome enough, now it's a Transformer too. By the way, there may be spoilers in here if you haven't read Star Trek versus the Transformers number 3. Just saying. The story of Star Trek versus Transformers so far has been chaos as Kirk's crew, the Autobots, the Klingons, and the Decepticons all skirmish on the planet Cygnus 7. Kirk's crew was at first unable to tell friend from foe, as the Transformers all appeared to be potentially dangerous giant robots.
Nah.
But Spock's mind-melded, of course. He mind-melded with Optimus Prime.
He did what
to help
now?
Fix that. He mind-melded what?
With Optimus Prime.
Yes.
With Optimus Prime.
It's another sentient life form.
Hey. Is that the most ridiculous thing you've seen on Star Trek?
No, by okay. far, no.
Okay, let's continue. Spock learned that the Autobots and Decepticons have been at war for a long time, and that, just like the original Transformers cartoon, that war brought them to Earth, where they disguised themselves as vehicles. The war was starting up again on Earth when World War III happened, just like the history in Star Trek universe. The Autobots traveled on a Titan, a Transformer-sized city, a Transformer the size of a city, called Fortress Maximus. Of course, they got to use Maximus in there. Fortress Maximus transformed into a starship and took the Autobots away from Earth until they were attacked by the I'm getting confused just reading this. By the Decepticon Titan, Triptychon. Wow. And crash landed on Cygnus 7, where the Transformers remain dormant until now. The battle on Cygnus 7 began swinging in favor of the Decepticons and the Klingons, who had formed an uneasy alliance, while Kirk and several members of the Enterprise crew and several Autobots remained trapped on the planets in one of the planet's mines. Ratchet up! Ratchet came up with a plan that could make the Titan ship functional again by hooking.
What could this plan be?
Yeah, by hooking Kirk's mind up directly. Forget that Spock can already do this. By hooking up Kirk's mind directly up to Fortress Maximus' computer. The Titan was able to use Kirk's memories to take the form of the Enterprise. Now back online, Kirk is able to pilot the massive starship Transformer and blast free of the mine. Once again, Kirk transforms the Enterprise into a giant robot. Rather than being Fortress Maximus, the robot borrows Kirk's middle name and becomes, of course, Fortress Tiberius.
Uh-huh.
And there's a picture of that in the story. It's I've never seen anything quite like this.
He's got some groovy bell bottoms going there.
He does.
The shoulder pads, a couple of nacelles on his shoulder, his back. But what's funny is that when I saw the story before actually reading it, I just saw the picture, and I said to Clinton, "Wow, I hate the people that are on the ship."
I mean, it's breaking in half and all sorts of, but at least now we know that, well, it's not really the Enterprise.
I was in the turbo lift when he transformed.
It was a snap. Yeah. My back, it was a snap.
Yeah.
So, you can decide. I see Bumblebee down there on the ground for scale, apparently down at the bottom of that illustration. You can look at this amazing picture.
It's something.
If you go to the show notes for episode 35 over at thetopicistrek.com, and you can give us your opinion about, does this fortress make my Enterprise look big? I don't know.
Hey, by the way, double spoiler alert. These are designs that were stolen from Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek.
I did not know that. Oh, I did, however, find out that Quentin Tarantino wants to be in the Picard series. So just so you
know. This just in.
So does Fortress Tiberius, apparently, now.
So, you know, as we know in the world of Transformers, Decepticons are always pulling the strings in the background. And
Oh, ow.
Yes, you want to add something to this, Chuck? You got something to share?
Finish it up. I want to see how you finish that segue.
So, speaking of pulling strings, let's move on to our next story.
I was taking a drink while you were doing that, too. Ah, my goodness. From clickondetroit.com comes the story of Dreamland Theater in Ypsilanti to host Star Trek themed puppet show. I was really hoping you'd give this to Craig just to see how he pronounced Ypsilanti.
Ypsilanti. I could say there that you go. All day long.
It's not Ypsilanti, dude.
Whatever.
Anyway, I'm having fun with Craig now.
Wait a minute. Let me check. Nope. Don't care.
That's why we keep throwing the mud. A nonprofit puppet theater in Ypsilanti will be hosting a Star Trek themed puppet show Saturday afternoon. I know that name because I grew up in Michigan. The Dreamland Puppet Troupe will be performing a Mad Lib style show based on Star Trek the original series, where the script is filled in before the performance with words gathered from the audience suggestion. Doors open at 4. This was already on, I believe it was the 16th of December. I went to their Facebook page, which you can find if you go through the show notes. And there was one comment that said, great show, recommend it. And of course, Dreamland Theater came back and said, thank you.
I wish there was a video because I would see if this was in my town, I would have gone to that.
Absolutely.
Maybe they'll get some notoriety and take it on the road.
Hey, they mentioned Mad Libs and Star Trek. I'm in. I love Mad Libs.
We have Dr. McCoy. We have Lieutenant Uhura, we have Mr. Spock, Mr. Sulu, and apparently Ensign Kyle. their Kirk right. Needs a little work.
Well,
actually, Dr. McCoy looks even more tired than normal.
Yeah, he looks like super cratchety.
And these are marionette style puppets. So think Thunderbirds.
Right.
To the ship.
nacelles to battery powers to go.
Engage, Mr. Sulu. You know, his hand's just fumbling around. On
just kind of warp whatever my hand hits. There we go.
That's right. It sounds like this.
Yeah. I would have totally gone to that. I wish there was video. Man, wait a minute. I'm going to look on YouTube.
You look on YouTube.
Well, you look on YouTube. I'm going to quickly mention there isn't really a story associated with this article, but there was a school group put on, and this is from the Idaho County Free Press, Star Trek's The Exposition Menace.
I love the name.
And we see pictures of the production. It was a spoof of Star Trek presented December 17th and 19th at Kamiya High School. And the play was under the direction of teacher Jody Dowd and Taylee Hopkins. I looked online for video of this. I did not find a video of the production itself. I found a video kind of behind the scenes. So if you go to the show notes for episode 35 over at The Topic is Trek, you can see these images, and I have a link to the video where you can check that out. So I thought that was interesting to have all these different mashup kind of, because apparently this is also a mashup of Star Trek and Star Wars. Hmm. So you have puppet Star Trek, you have high school students doing a production of Star Trek with Star Wars things going on. So lots of Star Trek activity outside the main realm.
Hey, next season they're going to add in Transformers.
Absolutely. They're just going to, the kids are going to have to like bend themselves in these weird shapes. Did you have any luck over on the YouTube?
Nope. Okay. Hey, but there's good search for Star Trek puppets. There's plenty.
I don't know. What I was like. But be careful. We don't necessarily sanction everything you may find if you search for that.
Yeah, but it's there.
Letting you there. Know.
Yeah, nothing with the puppets that we saw a picture of. But I did see the first one was like Star Trekking with and it had a potato sitting at the con. So, no.
Yeah. But we have more in the way of comic news as well. Something I don't own the device, so I don't know whether it's of major import to people, but I thought we would cover it anyway. Can you tell us about it, Craig?
Yes, and I do have one of these in my house. So okay. Star Trek comics are now available to read on a Nintendo Switch. So fans have a new way to read Star Trek comics. This week, the digital comics subscription service InkyPen launched on the Nintendo Switch. The service offers access to comic books from several different publishers, including IDW Publishing. IDW has held the rights to publish Star Trek comics since 2007. Many of these comics are featured in InkyPen's library, and I'm not going to go through the entire list, but there's a sizable list there. All kinds of Star Trek, TNG, all that good stuff, DS9, Starfleet Academy. IDW also offers comics based on Judge Dredd and the Transformers. So Transformers night here on Star Trek, the topic is Trek.
Indeed.
Available, I think is what they meant to put in there on InkyPen.
Haven't we had problems with comicbook.com before with these issues?
I think it was comicbook.com.
Yeah, exactly. So
Craig, does one of your relatives write for them or something?
That's not funny.
Yep, still doesn't care.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Nope, don't care. InkyPen includes Valiant, which offers a universe and superheroes, including XO, Manowar, Bloodshot, and Faith. Dark Horse Comics offers Hellboy, Aliens, Mass Effect, and The Witcher. Titan Comics offers video game-inspired comics based on Dark Souls, Dishonored, Tekken, and Assassin's Creed. Paper Cuts offers all ages comics,
Band-Aids
including
as well.
Excuse me? Yeah, Band-Aids.
Paper Cuts offers Band-Aids, yes.
That's right. They have The Smurfs, Hotel Transylvania, and Dinosaur Explorers. Anyway, there's a whole list there. There's a bunch of them, so go check it out. I think InkyPen is now available to download from the Nintendo Shop. Subscriptions cost $7.99 a month. Comics aren't exactly free, kids.
All right, so you're watching it on the little Nintendo Switch screen? Is that what we're kind of implying?
That's my impression. Well, you know, the Switch, you can put drop it into a cradle, and you can see on the screen.
Okay.
So you could potentially read it on the TV, I guess. I'll have to go check it out. I wonder if there's a trial.
How much is the Switch?
I don't know.
Roughly. I mean, are we talking 70, 150, 350?
I think we're, around the $300 range.
Okay.
But, you know, it plays games. It's a mobile playing.
Yep. Whoa. $299.99.
Yeah, so and you know, you take it out. It has a USB-C, so you can actually charge it later on while you're playing. It's easy to maintain, so it's got some standards. It doesn't have like some strange power connector when you put it on the cradle. It's using USB-C. So Harrison's got one. So I'll have to go steal it from him and try it.
Cool. All right. Cool. Well, now we're gonna move from this story to a story that involves something that. Probably the writers at comicbook.com go to the site and use this product all the time before they write the stories because they're always full.
They're drinking before writing.
Yes. So could you tell us about it, please?
I can. If you go over to MontgomeryScottScotch.com, you will find a website dedicated to a new brand of Scotch whiskey. And first you have to say, yes, I'm over 21. So you can enter the site. It's a typical alcoholic beverage.
Security there.
This is a blended Scotch whiskey, and they've got a nice little write-up. If the captain is the brain of a starship, then the ship's engineer is its heart. Aboard the Constitution-class Starship Enterprise, that heart was Chief Engineer Montgomery Scott. Born in Aberdeen, Scotland, on Earth on 2222. We're going to have a celebration on the show if we're still doing it in a few years, so we can celebrate, only 200 more years.
Woo-hoo. We will be.
He was, of course, known to all his shipmates and friends as Scotty. Montgomery Scott's engineering prowess was the stuff of Starfleet legend. Even under the most extreme circumstances, Scott almost always seemed to find a way to keep his engines working, ensure crew safety, and mission success. And of course, it goes on for a couple more paragraphs. And there is, of course, a buy now button. I did click through to it. I kind of like the look of the hip flask. I clicked through to it, a 750 milliliter bottle, which is your typical average size, you know, for off-the-shelf whiskeys and other adult beverages, came in at $49.95, and it will be available in, I believe they said, March 2019, so roughly 3 months after we record this. So I don't think I'll be buying one, just because Donna will look at me funny, and we already have a fully stocked liquor cabinet. So,
well, I'm not a huge. Well, let's put it this way: I haven't drank a lot of scotch in quite a long time. I had a boss that had scotch all the time. Here, Craig, you know, here, take drink this. I'm like, just wasn't my style back then.
By the way, that was a spot on impression of the guy.
Yeah,
spot here, Craig, on.
Drink this.
Says genuine.
I'm more of a bourbon guy, but I don't know.
The description is genuine blended Scotch whiskey distilled in Glasgow from one of the most awarded distilleries in Scotland. Doesn't say it by name. This 3-year-old blended whiskey is exceptionally smooth with just a very slight smoky note.
3-year-old.
Well, stick it on your shelf for another 20, and it'll be worth something.
Yeah.
Are you a Scotch drinker, Clinton?
If somebody else is buying, I'm pretty much drinking anything. So
that's all I am on pizza.
There you go. Well, so somebody else is trying to buy this because I have the 10 Forward vodka. So
yeah, you bought the vodka. You didn't get the.
I didn't get the Kirk one. I don't know.
No, but I did see a series of alcohol when I was in Australia. The VOQ, the Volk. I sent a picture to you guys.
All sorts of
different colors. There was purple and red and yellow and blue and green and orange. And I don't know what it was, but I was curious to try. But unfortunately, we were on a time crunch when I was visiting Philip from Australia.
Yeah.
And now it's called Tyler Whiskey instead. So
it's been changed.
Yeah.
Once it's distilled, it's in vogue.
I wonder if they'll have this on the ship.
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's not available till March. Probably not.
Well, it doesn't mean it's not ready. They'll have it on the show. I don't know.
Might have the Kirk or the 10
Forward.
They
might have some of the other ones that are available. Yeah.
We will find out and we will let you know when we return. Which sounds like we're going to a commercial break. We're going on to our next story.
Yeah. That's right.
This comes to us from the well-known website Hyperallergic.
Hypospray.
Yes. Many stories are told through the typography in science fiction films. So this I found a very interesting article about a book coming out. In films, there's a shorthand for the future, the typeface Eurostyle Bold Extended. It appears on the interface screens of the time-traveling DeLorean in Back to the Future, and in the logo of the Lunar Industries at the Lonely Lunar Station in Moon. It adorns the exterior of the USS Enterprise Starship in the Star Trek franchise and the Federal Colonies Intergalactic Megacorp branding in Total Recall. It gives both the Battlestar Galactica series title and the credits of District 9 an ultra-modern tone.
Is this like an Inside Hollywood thing that they just kind of know and they keep going, put it here next?
Well, like a Wilhelm Scream type of thing.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
I think the fact is that it's a sans serif face. Now, I don't know if that's inside baseball, but basically it doesn't have flourishes on it. It's just the curves of the letter itself. Not.
Hey, and by the way, Clinton has had a career with fonts.
I have. So, yeah, but my wife even more so than me. So if I'd known this book was coming out, I probably would have got it for her. But I think the fact that it is a very readable face, but doesn't, without serifs, it doesn't look old, right? It looks more modern. So I think that the combination of it looking modern and just being very, very readable, especially if you're using it in large spaces like on the hull of a ship, I think that just people gravitate towards using that. It might be default that people go to saying, oh, you know, let's use Eurostyle Bold Extended because, you know, that we know that always looks great. I don't think it's, you know, it's an inside joke type of thing, but I don't know. The article goes on to read, as blogger and designer Dave Addy explained in his new book, Typeset in the Future, out now from Abrams, he first noticed the ubiquity of the typeface in 2013. No matter where I looked or what I watched, there was Eurostyle Bold Extended, the most sci-fi of all typefaces, staring back at me, he writes. It became an obsession. Soon he found its genesis. And this is interesting, Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, in which it makes frequent appearances from the flight deck of the Orion spacecraft to HAL 9000 flat screen displays. So I think there is kind of your, you know, well, that to a lot of people, you get that impression, right, burned into your skull that that's what the future looks like. That's what the type of the future should be. And kind of by osmosis, it slowly becomes the typeface of the future. So this new book coming out, and I can't remember if it's out or not, but the article goes on into more detail, giving more examples of how and when it's used. And you can read more about that. Go to the show notes for episode 35 over at thetopicistrek.com, and you can read all about Eurostyle
Bold Extended.
Bold Extended.
I was just doing it while you were reading. Eurostyle Bold is available in Microsoft Word. However, Eurostyle Bold Extended is not. It's more of a squished font. It looks like somebody sat on it.
Right. And when you see it, you go, oh, you get your own impression of, I've seen it on this, I've seen it on that, I've seen it on this other thing. But you don't put it all together. And like this guy did, saying, no, really, it's everywhere if you start looking.
If you really wanted to get away with it and you're doctoring up some images, you could probably use Eurostyle Bold. I just typed in NCC1701 and close enough for me.
And by that's why he is not a set designer.
Right.
I put my videos together in 20 minutes.
The book came out on December 11th, so it's available now.
All right, cool.
So, and I see it on Amazon and other places as well.
Well, if I'd known about it a few weeks ago, it would have been under the Christmas tree.
It still can be
for next year. But
hey, my tree's still up.
There you go. I don't want to put it under your tree. No,
why not? Yeah. I'm not going to complain if you put it under my tree.
That's right.
All right. Let's move on to our kind of our next to the last story, but the last story from our main news section. And I know Craig has been chomping at the bit to talk about this.
That's putting it mildly.
Well, actually, you know, I'm sure a lot of us here, just like myself,
carry on.
Well, we're all fans of science fiction as well as Star Trek. Right. So I'm looking forward to The Orville because I think it did a pretty good job in this first season. I think it's going to do a better one going forward because they're making some changes, and that's what this is about. The Orville is heading for a bigger and more intense season 2. And those are the words that George Lucas used, faster, more intense.
Yes, faster, faster.
We need 15% more awesomeness.
Okay.
That was 14. Try again. Okay.
So when the Orville returns for its that's my 15%. Now, when the Orville returns for a second season and on December 30th, it'll be more of the same, emphasis on more. Not only will season 2 have more episodes than season 1, going from to 14 from 12. Wait a minute. Not only will season 2 have more episodes than season 1, 14 to 12.
Wait a minute. Is this written by comic book? It's from TV Guide.
The numbers are backwards.
TV Guide's quality's gone down.
Well, they put it in relatively the right order. Season 2 is having 14 and season 1 is 12.
Fair enough.
They could have just said from 12 to 14. But the science fiction series is really pushing what worked in season 1. Season 1 of every show, you're kind of just trying to figure it out, right? Adrian Palacki says to TV Guide. So we're all happy that it worked so well in the first place. In season 2, the journeys are bigger and more intense. This year, it genuinely feels that we're making more mini movies per episode, and the quality is a little different. Seth MacFarlane's sci-fi series has a big question mark over the Fox execs and fans alike in season 1 as it varied storytelling, a homage to standalone adventures of Star Trek, meant
episodes leapt from genre to genre each week. Some were dominated by McFarlane's trademark humor and involved sexualized cracks about alien anatomy, while others prompted more moral and philosophical questions in line with traditional sci-fi. And despite poor reviews from critics, who were baffled by the show's constantly shifting tone, season two is sticking with a mystery bag format.
Hmm.
Okay.
As opposed to J.J. Abrams' mystery box, this is a mystery bag. Yeah,
that's right. They couldn't afford the whole box.
No.
Not until Disney takes over.
Okay.
So that's the thing about the show. Even reading the scripts, I'm like, this is what's happening. Palacki told TV Guide, but in the most brilliant way, there's going to be more dramatic episodes, more comedic episodes, more relationship driven episodes. It's going to delve further into what fans appreciated last year. And fans pushed The Orville to Fox's fifth highest rated show of the season and behind only the surprise hit 911 for new shows on the network.
911.
Oh, yeah, 911. Oh, that didn't make it a little more dramatic. Yeah. When critics didn't like the whiplash of comedy, drama, and sci-fi, fans loved it. The Orville has a strong base of dedicated viewers who were enjoying the ride. So I remember I read an interview with Seth MacFarlane, and he was basically saying that, you know, the things that he wanted to do a sci-fi show that where people make weird, you know, human-like interactions with one another as opposed to like Star Trek, where, you know, it's a little too professional sometimes. So I'm looking forward to it. I thought a lot of it worked, and I think if they polish it some, season two could be really good.
Right. I'm definitely be watching. You know, we've talked about in the past, and, you know, I have certain feelings about the show overall that I'd kind of like them to play in their own backyard, their own sandbox. But still, we know that Seth is a Star Trek fan. So how can you not encourage someone who wants to try to do that same type of thing? I mean,
yeah. Well, I get that it's a homage to, like, you know, TNG and stuff like that. I still feel a desire to watch something TNG like, you know, that's why I like it.
All right, cool. So as we're recording, so that would be this coming Sunday that's back on. So the two shows are going to premiere fairly close together. I don't think, was that the case? That was pretty much the case last year too, right? Because Discovery started up.
It was in these, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I think Discovery started a bit later also last year, because I think it started in October. I can't remember now, but
I think you're
so,
right.
Yeah, I think The Orville had started and been going for a couple of weeks. That's the way I recall it anyway. But
the first episode aired on September 10th.
Okay. All right. So. All right, that pretty much wraps the regular news. But, you know, people are saying, how come, well, I'm sure that everyone's thinking everywhere, how come you don't talk about Vulcan, Alberta, Canada anymore? Well,
it's been, what, one or two episodes?
So we don't have anything new in the way of news as far as, you know, their events that are Star Trek related. But I wanted to make sure that you knew that things were still humming in Vulcan. From this story in the Vulcan Advocate, County Council approves gravel purchases. And it says Vulcan County Council approved December 5, providing gravel to two private companies. Council approved the sale of approximately 2,200 tons of gravel to Volker Steven at $12 per ton, and then the sale of gravel to G3 Canada Limited at $10 per ton for crushing gravel and $3.50 per ton for pit runs. Now, that's the kind of story that keeps Vulcan on the map. But I'm also thinking, you know, those gravel samples, those all that gravel going off someplace, would you like to say in your backyard, you know, my deck was made with gravel from Vulcan?
Yeah, I want a rock from Vulcan. That's all I want. Something. Yeah,
Souvenirs. Yeah. They're going to be buying this at $12 a ton, putting it in little plastic baggies and selling it at Star Trek gift stores everywhere for an exorbitant price. $12 per rock.
And they'll be able to say the truth. This comes from Vulcan.
Right. Before it was blown up.
So hopefully we'll get more Trek news coming out of Vulcan as the year rolls on. But I wanted you to know that things are still clearly churning in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Our group of crack ace reporters brings you that one.
Hey, by the way, I love the title of the website, The Vulcan Advocate.
Yes.
Didn't Spock have one when he was on trial?
He did.
That's the title of the next movie.
Vulcan Advocate. All right. Well, that's just about, before we close up some subspace chat, I want to mention that not only can you get the links to all the stories we talked about, but there are a lot of stories we did not get a chance to talk about. And all of those are also in the show notes for episode 35 over at thetopicistrek.com. All right, now it's time to close up subspace chatter.
No.
Turkey pot pie.
We're going all over the bridge. There it is. There.
Every time I hear that sound effect, I keep thinking of, you know, Space Madness.
And if you hear it long enough, that comes true.
Yeah.
Well, now it's on to our main mission. So hit the main mission music or theme or effect or whatever we got for main mission.
We have a main mission? All right.
I don't know.
Let's see. No,
we will next time.
That's what comes after main mission? Is this our Z-minus 20 part?
It is. All right, now that we're underground.
Very good. Wow. That brain.
All right. We had a post over on Facebook. Listener Ken asked a question, and I thought I would bring it up here. He said, did the whole red shirts thing on Star Trek occur by accident, or was it planned that way? Now, I gave Ken an answer, and my answer was that, well, really, it just was a case of they had to have these colorful shirts for the original series because the whole series was trying to be playing up the idea of color television. And right. Red just happened to be the shirts that were worn by the people that wanted security. So I don't think there was any grand plan for the color. And since security was red, they tended to be the ones that were the people that got killed the most. So I don't think it was anything intentional. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say one way or the other about that?
Go ahead, Chuck. No, you please. Go ahead.
No, I'm with Clinton on this one. I don't think it was intentional, but I think the writers may have eventually caught on to a running theme. And I don't think they were completely oblivious to the fact that they kept having these extras wearing red shirts.
Well, I'd read an article where they were talking about statistically, they weren't the highest number, in ratio, but there were more red shirts in general on the Enterprise. So just by percentages alone, they ended up being more prone to die. So yeah, this guy, not Scott Grimes, I was trying to look for his first name. Anyway, his statistics said over the course of three seasons, out of 239 red shirts, 25 died, which is 10%. Out of the 55 gold shirts, 10 died, which is 18%. So you're more likely to die as a gold shirt than it seems. And yeah, I think you're right that, oh, wait, and only a mere 6% of blue shirts. So that's where you want to be.
That's right. That's exactly where you want to be.
Yeah. So I think you're probably right. I think they probably caught on a little bit at some point, but.
And you know, obviously over the years that became a de facto thing to be. I mean, I recall in Star Trek 2009, you have that scene where they're going down onto the rig and the security person, Olson, clearly dressed in red, Oh, yeah. Everybody laughs because, you know, you're going to die.
Yeah.
And what happens? He dies.
Kirk, Spock, and Olson are about to jump out of a shuttlecraft. What could possibly go wrong?
Or how about when he told Chekhov to go change his shirt?
Yes.
And he had that face, that look on his face, like, oh, I'm doomed.
Yes, I think he was actually even told you have to go put on the red shirt. But, So, after the fact, and over the years, it has become that kind of joke. It was clearly a joke by the time Next Generation came around, because people made a comment about how many people were wearing red on the Next Generation when it premiered. But what I wanted to talk about a bit more was the idea of, you have this meme, this concept of you put on the red shirt and you die. And I'm wondering, has it gotten to the point? We know it's gotten to the point where it's kind of like a stormtrooper joke, right? The red shirts just always die. But is it diminishing now the impact of that in telling a story, but also in what good is it to have security if everybody in security just bites it as soon as something goes wrong? I'm just wondering, has it gone so overboard with security on a starship not being able to really handle anything other than getting shot?
I don't know that everybody in security dies. There were those two guys that were asked to escort the other guy off the bridge. They lived.
Yeah, remember those?
Yeah, I remember those two guys and that guy. Sure.
That one time that happened.
Wasn't the guy Nomad, and Nomad then zapped him in the corridor later on? So I don't know. I just feel like you have to have some gravitas to it, right? In order for it to be meaningful, that, wow, how powerful this thing is, or how horrible that loss is. The more just, oh, here comes security and bam, 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 they're just all shot and dead. It just doesn't seem to have a lot of, impact anymore. Well,
I think part of that, when you're looking, especially something like Star Trek, you're looking at it, 9 times out of 10, they get shot and they disappear. There's no body laying there. There's no blood or nothing. Even the ones that get killed, they're laying there. There's no blood or anything. So it's not, and they never hold a vigil for the red shirts that died, did they?
No. Even on Operation Annihilate, they were drained of all their blood and they were sitting there, just laying there. Well, just leave them.
Yeah. No wonder they're not bleeding.
So I feel like that, having them nameless like that at a certain point does a disservice.
They weren't to all having, nameless. Having meaning.
Was that? No, they're not all nameless, but mostly they are nameless. And not unlike the bridge crew of Discovery, but, I think we could improve on that this year. But I just, this question brought up this whole idea of red shirts and the sheer number of them. And what does that say about Starfleet training? Or, everybody just kind of can't handle it. They succumb to the enemy no matter what happens. They give up the ship. They get blown up on the planet. They something happens to them all the time. I just feel like you need to have a couple of episodes where security really pulls it off and get them a bit more back up in people's eyes. Is, oh, I guess they really can do their job. So, oh my God, look what happened. When did you see what they did to security? Not, oh, please. That's red shirts.
Well, I've got an idea.
Yes.
All right. So we saw the statistics where they were talking about how Discovery rose in the ratings, and so did 9-1-1. Why don't we have Star Trek 9-1-1?
Brilliant.
And have a red shirt security team and performing small acts of miracles, basically.
So they have body cams on, right? And they go around the different decks and
pull over ships.
Yeah. I think you're onto something.
There you go. Yeah. So then you just mix the two.
A space version of TJ Hooker.
Well, actually, if you recall, who narrated Rescue 911 was right. William Shatner. So it's all meshing together into this one big thing here.
I call it a glitch in the matrix, but okay.
And that guy that was on TJ Hooker looked just like him.
Yeah.
They dressed him up after the statue that was in Iowa.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, he looks nothing like the statue, believe me.
Yeah, nothing.
And I think we've got enough callbacks in this show.
Yeah. All right. So if anyone out there, your opinion about red shirts, if you have an opinion about the question about was red shirts a thing on Star Trek that occurred by accident or was planned that way, let us know. But also, what your feelings are about, when I say red shirts now, in this case, really I'm talking about security. So even on Discovery, you have red shirts, even though they're in blue. Okay. So feelings about security, like the Makos on Enterprise seem like a much more impressive force than Starfleet security is. And I know that, well, Makos were meant for a different mission than Starfleet is, but they're security people. They should be up to snuff. They should be able to do those same type of things, right? All right. That's my two cents on the subject of red shirts. And I look forward to hearing your feedback. You can drop us a note on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, or leave a note on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheTopicIsTrek. Pretty clever, huh? All right, let's return from our main. Oh, yes, I got a.
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Oh, very clever indeed. All right, let's return from that main mission with a great closing theme for main mission.
The M5 has it from here on out. Everything is in control. Just trust the M5.
All right. And we're back.
Yeah, thanks.
Did you miss us?
Somebody needs to check the MP3 encoder on that M5.
I know, it's very strange. It's time for our Warp Speed Roundtable. Last time around, we asked the question, which Trek character's origin story would you like to learn? And we heard from a couple of people with their thoughts on it. Melissa replied saying that we know about Data's creation story, and we know that by the time he faces Sela's incursion, he's been on active duty for 26 years. I'd like to see his first years, his time at the academy, his early assignments.
His days on the test bench.
Yes. Does this hurt? Is that better or worse? Sandy replied, Mr. Spock. And I thought that was an interesting. I feel like Mr. Spock is one of the stories we know the most about from his childhood. We know a little bit about from the Kelvin timeline, a bit about his time at the academy.
We know some of the decisions that Sarek made from Discovery.
Right. So, yep. I feel like, but you know, there's also the time after. It's not his origin story, clearly, but there's the time when he became the ambassador and eventually became the ambassador to Romulus, to try to sue for peace there. So I suppose we could go in that direction. Poez wrote, in 3 years of TOS, they never once had their first name spoken. We got to know names like Lee Kelso, Mark Piper, Phil Boyce, Kevin Riley, Mira Romaine, even her parents' full names, Angela Martinez, Esteban Rodriguez, Robert Tomlinson, Helen Noel, but never the first names of Uhura or Sulu. What brought them to the academy? How many hobbies did Sulu have before he became a Starfleet officer? Could Uhura have pursued a singing career instead of enlisting in Starfleet? I'd like to know.
We knew what Sulu's first name was. Did they mention it in the first?
I'm trying to remember. This is when somebody yells at their listening device, because I'm trying to remember the origin of the two names, Hikaru and
Nyota.
I
never heard Uhura's name.
I can't remember if they are both out of fan stories and the books.
I think Uhura's was mentioned in a book somewhere, and then they of course kind of wrote it into the films. Right. But I don't think we ever really heard her name beyond that. And Sulu, I could have sworn, I know in one of the movies when they're on the bridge and stuff, they're talking about.
Oh, they do. They yeah. I mean, the they movies, they mention. Yeah,
it. I don't even remember Uhura's name in the movies.
Well, if we're talking about Kelvin timeline,
But I'm talking, you know, through the 80s and 90s. I don't remember her name being mentioned there either.
I think it was mentioned in a book. And that was about it.
But as far as their background goes as well, certainly Sulu appeared to have many hobbies that he used once and then never used again. Is, you know, oh, look, I like botany and I like, you know, swords and but use it once and then we never hear about that again.
Well, we were talking about the, as I was reading through that Montgomery Scott Scotch, he had 11 different assignments. Let's talk about some of his experiences on other ships that he was assigned to.
Fair enough.
What commanders did they... There are a lot of characters that we could explore their backstory and their history.
And JT wrote Miles O'Brien.
There's another one.
So a lot of stories need to be told out there. And all these characters, by the way, they all want to be in the Picard show. So maybe get some of their backstories.
Here you go. By the way, so Nyota, Gene Roddenberry approved of the name. Nichelle Nichols also approved, and was very excited when Rotzler informed her that Nyota means star in Swahili. After originating in Star Trek II biographies, Nyota started appearing in Star Trek novels, such as Uhura's Song by Janet Kagan.
So I doubt
we heard her name at all, ever, until...
All right, so now on to this week's topic. We are approaching the new year, so it's time to make some predictions. What do you think we'll be hearing about in Star Trek news in 2019? So each of us is going to give a prediction for something that will happen in 2019. Might be the same because we haven't discussed them amongst ourselves. And we will check in at the end of next year and see how we did. So I will start off because I want to make sure everybody's all set. My prediction is we will get movement on Star Trek IV. The movie won't come out, obviously, next year. But my prediction is that things will be squared away to the point that we actually begin production on Star Trek IV.
I'll agree. I concur.
It will be in the Kelvin timeline. And I won't give any prediction on whether it's the last movie in the Kelvin timeline, because I think that's box office drives that more than anything else, but that's my prediction. All right, let's move on to Craig.
Well, I kind of had the same prediction. I was thinking we're going to hear that Chris Pine's on board and, you know, everybody's happy, but so I'll come up with another one. I mentioned to Clinton before was, Chris Pine won't be in it. And all of the other Chris's in Hollywood will come up and take his place, much like Heath Ledger in the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. You know, when he passed away, literally passed away, all these other actors stepped in to help finish the movie and played the same part. So I think we're going to have all the Chris's in Hollywood, Chris Pratt, Chris Walken, everybody come in and play the
Kirk. We were discussing that, saying like Chris Elliott, Chris Rock, you know, it's just like... going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing.
And I mentioned that I would pay good money to see Chris Elliott play Kirk.
So kind of a weird, now you could extend that to now, could some of them be playing the dad as well? You know, the Chris Hemsworth?
Oh yeah, that's right. Cause
obviously I'd say it'd be really weird is Chris Hemsworth says, I won't play the father, but I'll play Kirk. No. That makes no sense. But
yeah. Yeah. You're not helping.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's kind of a goofy one, but I don't know. Another prediction I would say, real quick, I think, we're going to get another Star Trek show, announcement next year.
Okay.
On CBS All Access.
You want to take any stab at what you think it might be?
Maybe we'll hear some movement on that Khan series.
Okay. All right. Cool.
I was going to say that as well, is that we'll see some new property based on the success of Discovery. We've got the Picard story. I think as far as that goes, I think we're going to see... I don't think we could... We will find anybody crazier than what we've made up in that series of actors that will be appearing. But we may be pleasantly surprised by some of the names that come out on that series and go, oh, why didn't we think of that? That was just too obvious. Mm-hmm. And of course, we will get more news in 2019 from Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Well, that goes without saying.
Well, I had to put it in there. I got to get one right next year.
I do have a feeling. Well, you want to continue, or we want to?
No, go ahead. Go right ahead. If you've got some more, bring them. I mean, we're looking into the future.
I think on the Picard series, we are going to see a version of Data, not Brent Spiner Data, maybe.
When he was still a breadboard prototype.
Yeah.
Picard, a spark happens as he's working on it. No,
just because, a little Raspberry Pi sitting on a table.
He spilled some soda, and it's like the Powerpuff Girls. He spilled some soda, and Data was born. Yeah.
Is that, you know, he transferred himself basically into B4. Mm-hmm. You know, when he died in Nemesis. So I can imagine that to get around the Brent Spiner maybe not wanting to do it because he's older kind of thing, which he's continuously said, you know, he could easily transform himself into another body trying to improve on himself.
He'll turn himself into Quester.
A transformer.
The Quester tapes 2.0.
Why do you look like Optimus Prime?
Fortress Tiberius.
So the one article I saw when they were talking about different people that could play a version of Data, I went, okay, you know, I could almost be down for seeing somebody else take it over, or, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it would. I think that if that were to happen, that I think it would add an element that would probably be needed because, you know, Patrick is older, and mm-hmm. I think you'd want to have somebody in the series.
A foil?
Well, not so much a foil, but somebody who might be the person, you know, it's kind of like the old Mutual of Omaha, you know, we're going to send Jim out into the field to wrestle this alligator. You know, I'll just stay here behind the desk. So I think that, you know, if you have that dynamic, that would be a good thing to have in there as well, rather than just two knowns.
You got to have something. You just don't want to follow up Picard around, you know, just watch him go to the bathroom, cook a breakfast.
I don't want those things at all. Do not want. All right. We've given our predictions for what will happen in 2019, but you may have some more. And if you do, you should let us know about them. Once again, you can tweet at us at The Topic is Trek, or you can leave a note on the Facebook page, The Topic is Trek. All right. But all that aside, it's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here. But first, I want to mention that we'll probably be a little more of a gap between episode next.
We have some place to be.
Yeah.
Some places to be.
We will be over there and over there and over there, down in the Bahamas and so forth on the Trek cruise. So it'll be a few weeks before the next episode. So we want to wish everyone a happy new year.
Absolutely.
Hope your holidays have been good so far and will continue to be so. But all that said, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, at Comedy Forecast on Twitter, comedyforecast.com, all one word with the number 4, on Facebook, everywhere. I don't have a page yet on every single service out there, like MeWe, but maybe soon enough. And you, gentlemen, give your plug.
You can find us at Technorama Podcast. Just search for that. You'll find us. The podcast is mainly hosted over at chuckchat.com. You can find that and a whole bunch of other podcasts. But if you search for Technorama Podcast, you'll find it on YouTube and Facebook and all the other good places, which are, of course, linked from the main website. So we are still doing Technorama. Coming up on 14 years, Craig? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're closing that 14-year gap. That's right.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So yeah, one day we're going to get our act together.
That's right.
Find the secret of success.
You should listen to these gentlemen. They know lots of stuff. I'm a little behind them. So I'm about 6 months newer than their show is in the annals of podcasting. So first out of the gate. All right. Time to hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
Don't put on that red shirt, yeah.
I like Roxanne.
We did that one already.
Oh!
I love that music.
So dramatic.